Yep. Give me a nod when you're ready. I'm like four. Jitter's ready. Stand by.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Bullets and Bourbon. I'm joined by my co-host Frank Gao, and we got a special guest, Ellis Dominich. So a few weeks back, I did the gun run. We've talked about it in the previous two episodes with Brittany and then me and Frank talking about it. But this time we brought Ellis on because we wanted to talk to him about his method behind putting on these matches and how he gets his, you know, how he gets his creative thinking whenever. How can I put these guys through a good match in rugged terrain and keep them going? So I had a lot of fun. I learned a lot. I kind of got reinvigorated with my passion with wanting to stay physically active and also keep up with the marksmanship side of the house. But before I go any further and we start getting into the questions, I want to turn it over to you, Ellis, and just talk about yourself some.
Sure. Thanks for having me on the podcast, guys. I listened to the episode with the RPGI guys about match, you know, financing stuff. I found it just spot on and fascinating. It was a great interview. So I'm happy to be on the podcast. About me. So I grew up in Northern Virginia but kind of out in Western Northern Virginia, like I like to call it, where it was, you know, small towns, one stoplight, that kind of thing. Now it's all like wineries and massive mansions and stuff from the DC bloat that's spread out there, but small town life, guns. I think there may be a picture with me with a toy gun when I'm like still in a diaper. So I've always liked guns, but I wasn't necessarily around them a lot growing up. I had some friends. Sometimes we'd shoot. Always had BB guns though. Always was shooting BB guns. Always going out in my yard, playing army, you know, doing that kind of stuff. But not a lot of firearms, you know, true firearms experience till later. ultimately, you know, I don't know if you know this before having me on the podcast, but I am both an army guy and an officer. So I mean, this is like your worst nightmare, right?
Well, Frank's a major.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So, you know, and we kind of find it funny, like I, you know, years ago, about 2 years ago, I asked Frank, I was like, hey man, like I've had you on a few times. Like, I think we really do this well. We have good dialogue, you know, how about you be my co-host? And it kind of developed into that staff and CO officer relationship. Nice. You know, I'm retired now, but like we really just developed this relationship and we kind of figured out how each other works and kind of bounce off of each other.
Yeah. To chime in, I instantly officered this podcast up. Like I'm the reason we write questions before we interview people.
Yes. No, right. he Frank absolutely improved this 100%. Like, he really helped professionalize the podcast.
So it was just all bourbon before, and then now you actually have an agenda.
I mean, Matt, you recorded some episodes that have never seen the light of day.
Because yes, I have.
Y'all were too drunk off your asses.
I will bring that up and talk briefly on it. It was quite hilarious. So I was at a match. I think it was up in Indiana, and like we had the whole team there. We're in the hotel room at night. We have guys like, you know, Jay Carrillo, Kim Peterson, like big three gunners. And, you know, I wanted to do a serious interview with a friend, Kim Peterson, because he was in the army. You know, I wanted to talk to him about transition, out of the military and like just things to think about, because at the time I was going to start my transition out of the Marine Corps. And what happened is we started the podcast, we started getting too heavily into drinking, and then it just turned into a giant shit show. And like there were things that were said in there that can never see the light of day, or like bad things would happen. This podcast would probably get shut down.
Nice.
But Frank definitely improved it.
Awesome.
Nothing against you being an officer, dude. But yeah, we've had guys from the Army on before.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. So yeah, so basically I ultimately did ROTC, George Mason, commissioned in the infantry. I spent a couple years in the infantry down at the 82nd in North Carolina. Did a short deployment to Afghanistan with them. And then I went out, tried out for special operations and got selected for psychological operations. So I'm a PSYOP officer. And I did that for a few years in East Africa, a couple of deployments there.
Oh, that's
ultimately, shame. Yeah, it is. Not much has changed there, you know, since the old 93. Decided to come off active duty. I'm a reservist now, still continuing to serve and running these matches.
And your unit is out of Japan, right?
Yeah, I'm kind of a unique reservist where I'm an individual mobilization augmentee. It's a lesser known program in the reserves, but it's fantastic. I try to tell everybody I can about it. And so I'm, instead of being in a drilling reserve unit, I'm actually in an active duty unit. So I go over there and do about a month and, you know, basically do all of my reserve time condensed and knock it out.
You kind of said something I kind of want to bring up or talk a little bit more about, because like my whole active duty career, you know, I went from one unit to the other, deployment to deployment. You know, you don't get any control over some of the deployments you go on. But, and I'm bringing this up because I know in the Marine Corps, they have the IMIDET program as well. And there's a lot of opportunity, just saying, like Marines, Army, you know, whoever's listening to this, that program is really good if you're on the cusp of getting out and you're like, well, I still kind of want to serve, because the opportunities to go to some of the cool schools and the opportunities to jump on some really cool deployments are there. And I will say some of those opportunities are better than if you are on active duty. Like the need is there.
Especially if you're an officer, where we have fairly rigid timelines and rigid jobs. We have to do them or we don't get promoted, all this kind of stuff. And you're way more flexible as an IMA, you know? So I think it's an awesome program.
So to kind of move it to what we wanted to discuss, like, you know, a little bit more about yourself, but at what point did you start competing? You know, what disciplines were you shooting in? And at what point did you decide you wanted to start running your own matches?
Yeah, so it was 2018 was my first match I ever went to. And it was the Pawnee Run and Gun out in Oklahoma. And I had watched a video about it a couple years before. And this guy's running and like part of his kit comes flying off on the ground, and he's got like a GoPro equivalent at the time. And he's going back to like pick up his ammo, and they're shooting in all these different positions, you know, crazy terrain. And I thought, wow, this is the coolest thing ever. You know, I'm going to go do that someday. But I was on active duty and I was deploying like crazy to Africa and, you know, no time. And so one of the first things I did when I came off active duty was get a slot, fly out there and compete in that match. And I had an absolute blast. It was a great time. I thought of myself as a decent shot because under the Army system, which granted isn't great for measuring marksmanship, the Marine Corps, I think, does a much better job at marksmanship than the Army does. But regardless, I shot expert for years. I was shooting expert. And so I was like, man, I'm a good shot, you know? And then I go out to this match and, you know, you name the problem with gear and, you know, all sorts of stuff. And I just, you know, performed like garbage, but it was a great time. Met all these awesome people and, you know, it was everything I thought it would be. Now I thought back in, I think I was in on a deployment in 2017 when I first had the idea to run my own match, because I had seen some of these videos of this style of shooting. For those of you who don't know, it's generally known as run and gun, or really center fire biathlon is what they call it. But a lot of the matches are, you know, the Pawnee run and gun, the, you know, something run and gun, but many different matches. My match, of course, is called the gun run, but essentially it's a 5K where you, or 10K or even longer, where you walk or run with all your kit through varying terrain and shoot several stages. So, you know, there's no resupply. There's no, you know, walking through the stages beforehand or anything like that. So I had first seen some videos like this in 2017 and I was like, wow, it'd be really cool to run my own match one day. I never, ever thought I would get to where I'm at now. So I came off active duty, did the Pawnee match. It was great. Immediately signed up for another match, you know, one or two other matches that were closer. There was really only a couple that were east of the Mississippi. So they were still significant, you know, travel time to do that. So signed up for a couple more. They were great. And eventually the stars kind of aligned where I didn't quite have a real job. There wasn't necessarily a match near me. And, you know, I kind of knew some of the community and I started my own match. So that was 2019 was the very first edition of the Gun Run. So we're at our fifth year anniversary. But in terms of other shooting disciplines, I've shot a handful of IDPA matches. I shot three gun like one time and that's basically it. So I'm not a competition guy. I do not consider myself a competition shooter in your general sense of the word.
And I mean, that's all right. I mean, like I did, I think I, you know, I primarily just do three gun and I've always kind of centered myself around that. Now, like we brought it up before in this podcast, like I was forced into doing bullseye pistol. And I got as good as I could when, you know, for the average, I shot like a 267 out of a 300, you know, most times, sometimes way worse, but never really better than that. And I thought I was a pretty shit bullseye shooter compared to my guys. I was like, they were averaging a 285 to 292. Like, that's pretty fucking good. Like, you know, they were up there in the standings. I not so much. But you know, most guys who get into the competitions that they start in generally stick to that. I'm at that point now where all I want to do is try some different things out and see what I enjoy at this point. And I mean, you might get there too. Like, hey, I want to do this and then stick with that for a while. And I mean, but
should shoot US PSA, I think, because I am not a fast shooter. I'm much more of an accurate shooter. And it's very hard for me in training to push my speed. And I think USPSA is really good for that kind of thing.
So what I've always kind of learned, it's easier to make somebody accurate. It's easier to make somebody who's already accurate really fast, but it's really hard to make somebody who's really fast accurate. So like you're at the right area where you want to have that accuracy, but now it's just pushing yourself out of those limits. And like, I mean, offline, I'll tell you some different drills that I used to do just to kind of push myself to get myself faster and to think faster and perform faster. There's a lot of stuff out there, but thanks. I mean, yeah, like at this time, like that's good. It's better to be accurate than fast because you have the fundamentals built in. So that's awesome.
Nice.
So one of the things I noticed about the community of people you've built, which is, you know, in this day and age in the shooting sports is not an easy thing to do. But you've successfully done that, you know. It honestly reminds me of the early days of three gun. But how have you gone about building a community around your sport to where everybody just kind of gets together, hangs out, and just enjoys each other's company? Because in most shooting sports, USPSA, you don't really have the opportunity. You see the guys on your squad, and then you shoot a 1 or 2 day match, and then you're gone. In three gun, you tend to have a lot more community, but certain matches, the only guys you're going to see is the guys on your squad. Here, you've built something to where after the match, like, well, we were hanging out till about 12:30 in the morning and just everybody just enjoying themselves, talking about the match, talking about life, people meeting new people and, you know, growing their network. How have you gone about doing that?
So it was something that I didn't really think about as a goal, and it became more of a byproduct, but it was maybe like 2 years ago or something. You know, I was standing around a similar fire like that with a whole bunch of people, and it never really hit me before. I was like, man, all these people who know each other now from all over this, you know, the Southeast region, never would have known each other if it wasn't for this event. And I think that's just really, really cool. And probably one of the best aspects of the Gun Run and the run and gun community as a whole. So I think for my event, primarily the volunteers did, you know, most of that, the group that we have working these matches They're just incredible, all walks of life from all over the place. They give you the shirt off their own back. And you know, these events never, ever could have happened without all the volunteers that I get coming back time and time again. And another thing I think is the competition at the gun run is really with yourself. So we may talk trash between each other and the top, you know, 5-10 guys are vying for positions, but overall the event, you know, you're competing against your own ability to think when you're tired, you know, plan your ammunition and gear properly, and, you know, not make mistakes to pass the stages. So with that, you have a lot less of the kind of, you know, dare I say, douchebaggery that comes with very high level, you know, competition type personalities. A lot of those people don't tend to come to my match. And, you know, some of them just haven't heard of it, but some of them, you know, they want to have the exact same competition experience for each shooter so that it's fair, as fair as possible. You know, they want the scoring to be, you know, a certain way, and you know, they care about this stuff, and that's good. I think all competition shooting is good. It makes you a way better shooter. And, you know, I tell people go to, and you don't have to come to my competition, go to any competition. It'll make you better. But ultimately at my match, you know, these people are coming out and they're just happy to be there. They're just happy they could show up with their kit, go out and shoot. Maybe they failed all the stages. You know, guess what? Next match, they pass one stage. You know, that match after that, they pass two stages. So they're actually, you know, working on it, on that stuff. And they're each, you know, encouraging each other and helping each other out with gear. One time, actually, it's like twice at least I've seen where a guy showed up and he goes, "Oh man, I forgot my pistol." You know, and somebody goes, "Here's a Glock 19 in a Safari Land, you know, go after it." So no, it's just a fantastic group of people. And I think that's just, you know, mindset from what the competition is, and the volunteers have made that happen.
No, and that's one of the biggest things I noticed. Like the volunteers that you have as your ROs, like, they're extremely accommodating. They're like, they're super chill. They're nice. They're not overbearing or anything like that. They're like, "Hey, here's the stage. You know, do you have any questions? All right, let me know when you're ready." Beep. And you go, you're on the clock, you're on the time. And the whole time the clock is running for whenever your run is going on too. So it's like, you know, I took this last one as, I'm just going to enjoy this. I'm going to sit back, listen to some music. I'm going to run. I'm going to walk. I'm going to go shoot. I want to do good on the shooting. And then I'm going to go to my next stage. And like, every single RO was super chill, super friendly, like, shake your hand. And it's like, I fucking like this. Yeah. Like, this is great. You know, one of the things I noticed, and like, me and Brittany were talking about this the other day, and she's like, "Hey, you need to bring this up." I was like, "Okay, I'll bring it up." And it was like, one of the things about like family affair and community, you had your parents out there, and your parents came out, helped out with the match, and like they were, you know, checking people in, you know, clearing out guns, and like, just super friendly people. Like, your parents are awesome. And it was like, really, like, me and Brittany were talking to them after the award ceremony, and like, just, they were just super excited for everybody. And it's like, that's cool. You know, that really is cool. And it's like, you know, they had music going on there at the start/finish line. And like, immediately I picked up, I was listening to the music, you know, and I was like, "Hey, that's Joe Bonamassa, ain't it? And your dad was like, "You got a good ear." I was like, "Oh, I've been listening to him for over 20 years." It was just a really fun event. And I mean, what I really liked about it is, you know, my time started, I ran, I shot, I was done. And then I met people I would have never met before there that live in this area, that, you know, one of the guys I met, he's a firefighter out in Fairfax County, and we probably talked for a good 2 hours. He's like, "Man, I want to learn how to do land nav. I want to learn how to do this. I'd like to." And I was like, "You want to learn how to do land nav?" He's like, "Yeah." I was like, "Give me your number." He's like, "What?" I was like, "Give me your phone number." He's like, "Okay." I was like, "I work at Quantico.
Yeah.
I deal with maps and map reading every single day. You know, nice. I I where my office is, I am right next to the woods. If I wanted to go on a land nav course, all I got to do is grab a card and like I can teach you how to do everything and I can take you out into the woods and I can get you on boxes. He's like, dude, I'm That's down. Awesome. Let's do it. I was like, all right. Awesome. That was pretty cool. I like that. You know, I really like to me, it's not just about the shooting anymore. It really is about the community aspect. If you're not enjoying the community around that you're around, you're not going to have a good time.
Agreed.
But, you know, we talked about, we talked for quite a while after the match. Like I said before, we were probably out there just sitting and, you know, drinking bourbon and, you know, talking till about 12:30 at night. And we started talking about music, in which you told me that you also play guitar. One of the things I found out years after years of competition, you know, running the Marine Corps shooting team, is that musicians tend to have this ability to get really good, really fast in the shooting sports. And a lot of it lends itself to having the discipline to train and break things down to the smallest level. Would you say that's been the case for yourself?
No.
Okay, that's first.
But I definitely agree with you because I have a buddy who's a really, really good guitarist. He played in Nashville and stuff and plays around. And I taught him like his concealed carry course for North Carolina. And, you know, I tell him the smallest thing and I can see him making the changes. Mm-hmm. And he was already a decent shooter and he was making these little changes. And I immediately remarked, I was like, he's just like, yeah, it's just like guitar. You know, you think about the mechanics and you practice it and then it becomes muscle memory. I was like, yeah, man, you're totally right. So I definitely agree with you there. For me, I think it was much more, you know, probably 3 years of, you know, suffering where I was okay. And really trying to get the kit how I wanted and get the practice in and work on all these, you know, aligning sights and squeezing the trigger. Okay. That's one thing, but all the extra stuff of, you know, I remember every once in a while it still happens. I haven't completely broken this habit. I've almost broken it, I think, because it only happened like once this last year. But basically, you know, you're on a stage shooting and you go for that reload and you grab a mag and it's got like three rounds in it, you know? And you're like, oh my, and that can cost you, you know, big time, you know, in some of these stages where they're very challenging, where you're doing some kind of weak hand only shooting with your arm simulating, you know, tourniquet, stuff like that, that can really cost you a stage. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, you know, in the real world, your life. So, you know, getting that habit of always topping up, making sure my magazine, you know, the one I'm going for is the one that I have left that's full, that kind of thing. Getting those habits has taken me, I think, a while to get out. But last year I went to another buddy's match and it's sort of thought of as one of the harder, better ones in the region. And I was able to pull off a win in my division for that. So it felt really good. I kind of felt like the last maybe year or two, maybe 2 years, I've really come together as a shooter and gotten a lot better in, at least in this discipline.
No, that's awesome. You know, when you can finally put it all together and things start to click, there's no better feeling. It's not just the matter of getting the win. It's recognizing that everything just came together and you remember that and then you can apply it to the next time.
And I tell other people, I was like, because there was a match where I was like top 10 in the match. And I was like, that was garbage. Like I every stage there was something I just totally blew big time. Mm-hmm. And it just so happened that other people weren't at that match who were better than me, you know, and I placed in the top 10, you know, and I tell people the goal should always be your performance being the best it can be, not how you place. So yeah, I agree with you.
So when going to one of your events, the gun run, there tends to be some secrecy behind it. An element of surprise almost. What's your method or mindset behind running an event in this fashion?
So we try to make the match real, in quotes. You know, we're still all running around shooting at steel targets and stuff. But, you know, with that mindset, in the real world, you don't get a walkthrough before a gunfight. Mm-hmm. You don't get a course map that shows you where all the stages are so that you can, you know, plan your run speed and your heart rate between stages and all that kind of, and you don't get any of that. So my mentality, and again, I didn't start this style of event. It kind of originated 20 years ago in Texas and slowly spread to other people. So, you know, I'm following in the footsteps of great people who push this type of event forward. But my mindset comes primarily from my time in the military, especially the infantry, and, you know, thinking about it from that perspective, opposed to thinking about it just from a competition shooting style, I guess. So that's why I always have blind stages and no course map, essentially, because that can be tremendous advantage for the experienced shooter. You know, guys like you guys who know how to make a stage plan incredibly quickly. I don't necessarily have that skill, and it shows. There was a match once. There's a guy named Sean Murphy, really good long range shooter. He wins sniper matches all over the place. Anyway, he came to a match once and he ran once with his normal setup. I think he worked for Night Force at the time. Really good shooter, did great. Then they had some no shows, so they let him run again at the end. And he did the match again, and he ran it with an M16A2 and a Beretta iron sights.
Hell yeah!
And guess who won the match? His second run won the match. He beat himself because, you know, having that knowledge of the route and the stages, I mean, he could just crush his previous one. So that's kind of my mindset on it.
Yeah, pretty cool. I hear that a lot. People get into competitions. Some of them do want those blind stages. I think that it's a better way of figuring out where your floor is at, right? So I'm the match director on Quantico, and me and my assistant match director, discussion we commonly have is like, it's so rare that we're shooting like to the best of our ability because we're running the event.
And I know that.
Right? Like when you're focused on, you're paying customers, people that came out to your match, you really can't worry about yourself. So the individual performance tends to suffer, but you get an idea of like, you know, if you're distracted and like something else is going on in your mind, that's the version of you that shows up. But, you know, in terms of these events, they tend to be about 5K and the stages tend to be spread out about every quarter to a half mile. So if someone wants to participate in a gun run, how would they prepare on, say, the fitness side as well as the marksmanship side?
Usually what I tell people is, you know, can you walk a 5K with your kit? So 25 pounds or something like that of gear. Can you walk it? If you can, then you can come to the match from the fitness side. There's a lot of people who make excuses. Oh, I'm old. My knees hurt. I'm fat. You know, it's some guy who's like 28 years old, you know. And this last match, we had a 70-year-old completed. So as long as you can walk, you know, okay, you can do the match. The running stuff, you know, you can do that later. And then are you safe with your firearms? All right, that one's a little bit harder to diagnose. A lot of people think they're safe and they're not. Mm-hmm. So going and getting some professional training always helps. But if you can handle your firearms okay and you can walk, you can come to the match. A lot of people get hung up on kit. We've got some articles on the website, www.thegunrun.us, about kit. But we've had guys come out there who just had a backpack and they just stuffed everything in a backpack. Now, of course, they ran a pistol, their pistol unloaded. You know, well, I think you had a holster. You
know? I did have a holster, but like you were talking about, like, you know, pulling a magazine out of your pouch and there are only three rounds in there. I had everything in my backpack except my pistol. I even had the rifle in the backpack. And anytime I left the stage, I was sure to put my used magazine in one part of the backpack and grab a fresh magazine out.
Nice. Smart. Yeah. So like, again, you didn't have to go out and buy, you know, all this pouches and, you know, I mean, just tons of kit like that. You don't have to for the first one you come out to. Eventually, you know, you might want some of that stuff. Because I think, Matt, you didn't even have a sling, did you?
Nope. And the thing is, I do, but like, I'll tell you.
Just like back in NAMM, right? You just hold it. You just carry the rifle.
I fucking hate slings. Like, and so like whenever it came to the last stage, you're like, okay, you know, you have to hold that water bottle and everything. And then you have to like, put a magazine in your rifle. I was like, well, easy. I'm just going to put my rifle on the table, have a magazine right there on the table too, and just slide it in, hit the bolt release, and then go to town. It was easy for me. I saw people who were slinging their guns and trying to get a magazine in with one hand and then using that same hand hit the bolt release, and they were struggling. I was just like, well, there's nothing that says I can't just put it on the table, so I'm just going to put it on the table. It's like, and maybe that's the game side of me.
No, like, that's using your brain.
Yeah. It's like, and like we've been doing this a long time, not just shooting, but like thinking, like, being in the military, you have to think outside the box. So I'm just thinking, why am I going to carry my gun and tire my arms out, and which will affect my shooting? Why not just throw something in my bag, have it on my back, you know, let all the weight rest on my hips and just keep moving. I'll get less tired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just want to call out something that you mentioned, Ellis, is that like people will make excuses whether on fitness side, but particularly when it comes to equipment. And that same refrain you hear when you ask somebody if they want to go shoot a competition, I've found that competitions are a great way to test your kit, right? And I'm sure you've dealt with it, right? I'm sure, like, how does your lost and found work? Because I'm sure a lot of stuff gets done.
Usually there's a RO tax on magazines, you know, so that you get them back with a few less rounds than $80 Terran Tactical, you know, base plate mag back.
What's the most expensive thing someone's left behind?
We had somebody lose a pistol.
Ooh.
Jokes on you. That was a backup pistol.
Yeah. This is the third year we've done the Land Nav match coming up here this May. And the very first year, some guy goes, they go for like 0.1. They come back it might have been actually stage one and two are like really close to each other, but I think they got to stage two where you actually had to use your pistol. And the guy just goes, oh, where's my pistol? And the RO is like, how should I know? And it turns out the guy, you know, no Loctite on his screws. So his whole holster with his pistol fell off in the wood.
We're just going to roll. Yeah. So we're talking about the scope that got lost. I don't know about the mount. But, you know, a lot of people just don't torque their stuff down. Like, they don't own a torque wrench, or they just don't Loctite properly. So, that tends to be an issue. But, you know, talking about natural terrain, you run your match in so many different areas, you know, in West Virginia, the Carolinas. So what are some things you look for when you are trying to find a range that's suitable for the gun run? And what are some considerations when you're looking at, like, different layouts, and then elevation, vegetation, and also like the trails that are available to you?
Yeah, primarily for my kind of feasibility assessment is the space. And some places may seem like they have a lot of space, 150, 250 acres or something like that. But once you start looking at property lines and things like that, you can very quickly get condensed. There's other matches out there that will do loops, you know, coming back to some bays. I prefer to try to not do that. Have a mixture of bays and natural terrain areas. So I'm always looking for that kind of stuff. But really the terrain has the biggest effect. As long as you've got good backstops and you can, you know, do it in slightly smaller areas than you prefer. But number one thing is actually mindset of the owners. And that is pretty hard to find. This style of event is out there, man. You know, it's outlaw in nature. There's no rule book. There's no association. Every match is different. Every match director gets to do it how they see fit. I love that. I think it's a huge benefit. But, you know, you go to some of these ranges and people are running around with guns. Yikes. You know, we don't
do cardio around these parts.
And, you know, and they have no idea how the actual procedures work and how safe it is, you know, compared to you go to a public range. Holy cow.
Oh, God.
I basically don't go at all anymore because every time I get flagged by some old guy, finding the owners that are on the same page who understand, you know, that kind of thing is more difficult. And I've been very lucky. All the venues I have, the owners are great. You know, not just in that mindset, but you know, believing in the Second Amendment, loving the community, all those kind of things they are all supportive of.
Yeah.
Also,
go ahead.
Also, I'll say the My Army experience helps a lot when it comes to looking at a piece of terrain, figuring out how to shoot. I designed tons of ranges before, you know, live company live fires, stuff like that, you know, where you have machine guns and, you know, way, you know, more advanced weaponry going on. So understanding surface danger zones, things like that has helped me, I think, make a safe match in areas where, you know, we can have ROs in their exact right spot and make sure they know the procedures and you can conduct a shooting at, you know, stage safely.
Yeah, absolutely. I got to take a second and shout out Lynn and Randy over there in Shadowhawk. I imagine they are very easy to work with. They usually are. They're very open to different kinds of events. An event that we do out there once or twice a year is, you know, Brendan Souter from RPGI. He does the day and night match out there. We basically shoot a bunch of stages in the day, and then we shoot them either nods or white light. And that obviously runs to a lot of logistical issues. The sound of rifle fire late at night, safety first and foremost, like scoring targets. But they, yeah, I just got to shout out Shadowhawk because they're super supportive. And I imagine working with them was pretty easy for you. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, it's been great.
Yeah, awesome. So your events don't have like divisions and categories like a lot of other competitions do, and that means that everyone is competing against each other. What was your rationale behind that?
Same thing as before with the, you know, no walkthroughs, no course maps kind of thing, you know, quote unquote realistic. The enemy doesn't care. They don't care how tall you are, how short you are, whether your magazine is a certain millimeter length. You know, they don't care about any of that. So, yeah, you have to compete against everyone on an equal playing field. You all experience the same level of suck. And there's tons of women out there and old men who can beat the pants off me, mm-hmm. you know, at physical fitness and shooting. So I don't think there's, you know, in my event, there's not going to be divisions. And I will say every once in a while, but basically once a year for one match, we pick some little kind of side challenge we do where you're still competing against everybody, but there's a side challenge. We give special recognition. In June, we're going to do an iron sight challenge. We've done lever actions. We've done shotguns. So it was still two gun and you still competed against everybody, but essentially there was the shotgun was the hardest one to do that. Lever guns was a little easier, but we just made some slight modifications to the brief. You know, maybe they got to load off the clock or something, you know, cause they're loading from a gate anyway, mm-hmm. you know? So that was the only time where we did, you know, a pseudo, you know, different division, but truly you still ended up on the score sheet like everybody else. So I think it's primarily bad guys don't care. You got to show up with what you got and run it.
Yeah. Yeah. Bullets don't do affirmative action. So yeah, hell yeah. Okay. I want to talk a little bit about the land nav courses that you do. So you do train individuals in land nav, and then you even run like land nav team competitions. So for someone who's like never used a map, a compass and a protractor, if they were interested in this kind of thing, what level, like how much would they learn in the middle of it? And then is there like a base level of proficiency that you would recommend them showing up to either the training or the competition?
You could show up to the training with no level of proficiency at all. We've taken people who have never done it and basically done half of the day in the classroom, half of the day in the woods, and gotten them to a level where they can plot points, use their compass, do a pace count. Mm-hmm. Now they're probably going to be dead reckoning straight through some nasty stuff to get to their point, but they understand the basics. And of course, most of these people, they want to come to the class. They're a little older. They actually listen. Mm-hmm. It's not an 18-year-old private. So they actually can pick it up pretty well in one day. And we've had those guys. Some of the guys that took the class, they came to the land nav competition, got all their points. Took them a long time, but they got them. So, you know, it works. I basically do one to two classes a year before, just kind of in prep for that competition. Just so if somebody, you know, one guy knows land nav, the other guy doesn't know land nav at all, he can come out of class real quick and kind of get up to speed on it. The event itself is probably the hardest one because it's at least double the distance. Mm-hmm. It's basically a 10K minimum, and that's essentially straight line. It's actually very hard to estimate the distance because it's not like a military course where you're like, here's 5 points, go out, get them, and then come back and shoot a bunch of stages. Mm-hmm. It's essentially, you know, hey, you're at the command post, go out, you know, patrol to this point. They go out to that point, they come back. Okay, hey, the command post is under attack. Move over here to stage one, you know, and they shoot stage one. And then they get another point or maybe 2 points, and they can choose which one they go to for first. You know, and there's a penalty if you don't go to the point, a time penalty, because it's still on the run clock. But those shooting stages are mixed in with the land navigation. So it's much more of still kind of a linear adventure, but with land navigation and, you know, not just following signs on a marked trail.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever have anybody?
Go ahead.
Do you ever have anybody get a running pace count and kind of just run from stage to stage?
Yes. The best teams will do that mostly. So, you know, the top few teams will generally be competitive. The last, let's say, last winners were actually civilians, but you know, we get a decent amount of military guys. 75th Ranger Regiment usually has a team, and yeah, they'll run anytime they can get on a road and run. They'll do that, opposed to just busting brush. And that's the main difference between the best teams and the teams that are going to be out there longer. Now this year we're going to have a drop dead time that you have to meet basically, but when we'll cut you off. We didn't have to use it last year because the teams that took the longest turned out they started earlier in the day. So we just let them keep going. But there was a team out there that went 13 miles. We've had teams out on the course for 8 hours. And it's supposed to basically be minimum 10K, 8 to 9 shooting stages. But if you're tough and you really want those points, you'll keep at it. And so it can be a very hard match for some people.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like it. So there's a lot of matches that kind of fall under the gun run umbrella, I would say. Are you able to list out some of the upcoming events that you have? And then sure. For someone who isn't perhaps on the East Coast, where are similar events in other parts of the country?
So if you go to the website, thegunrun.us, there's an events page. It's got my events up there. We've got 4 more events for the year. South Carolina in June, North Carolina in September, Alabama in October, and then a team night match in November back in North Carolina. And then also I list basically all the other events that are sort of like this that I know about by state. I mean, it's probably 25 events on here, something like that, spread out. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are out west. Texas has the most. That's kind of where it all started. So there's tons of matches in Texas. There's several other organizations kind of like mine that do multiple matches a year as well. But the other close by ones in the Southeast would be Georgia has something like 3 matches. And Kentucky and Tennessee both have matches as well.
Okay. So. Very cool. Well,
I highly recommend people check these out. Many of these matches are run by my friends. I go and work them. Again, it's the same kind of community out there as well, which I love.
Heck yeah. No, that's really awesome. We love all forms of competition, and really cool that Matt was able to go out there and participate in this one. I got to get out to go to one. We appreciate you coming on and talking about the gun run. At this point, is there anything you'd like to leave the listeners with?
Well, thanks for having me, guys. So I come at shooting sports from a Second Amendment viewpoint, I would say more than a let's go out and play a game and compete kind of mindset. And that's really what this style of match is all about, is being prepared to defend, you know, the homeland from all enemies, foreign and domestic. All of us have sworn oaths to the Constitution. And there's nothing else really out there like this for the populace. And I think it's just really important that, you know, an armed and trained populace is our best defense. So I'll leave you with a quote from George Washington. There is nothing so likely to produce peace as to be well prepared to meet an enemy.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Yeah, love the ethos, love the event, and you know, apparently it's a great community and everything. Definitely want to go out and participate. For those of you that are interested in gun runs, please look up the website. We'll drop the link inside the notes of the post. If you have questions, reach out to Ellis. He's very responsive. If you have questions for either of us, particularly for Matt, who actually did a gun run, let us know. And let us know how the episodes are doing, and we'll see you in the next one.